University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Session 2013. English as a Second Language. Core Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answers should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. What are Ali and his friends going to do at the gym?
Hello, Kareem. I'm meeting two of my friends at the gym today for judo practice. Would you like to come?
That's kind of you to ask, Ali. I'd love to come, but unfortunately, I have to finish my maths homework this afternoon. Maybe another time.
Hello, Kareem. I'm meeting two of my friends at the gym today for judo practice. Would you like to come?
That's kind of you to ask, Ali. I'd love to come, but unfortunately, I have to finish my maths homework this afternoon. Maybe another time.
Question 2. What does the mother tell her son to do because he is not feeling well?
I feel so ill, Mum. I really can't go to school tomorrow. I've got such a bad headache.
Well, I think you need to go to bed early tonight. You haven't been getting enough sleep recently. We'll see how you feel in the morning. Off you go.
I feel so ill, Mum. I really can't go to school tomorrow. I've got such a bad headache.
Well, I think you need to go to bed early tonight. You haven't been getting enough sleep recently. We'll see how you feel in the morning. Off you go.
Question 3. What does Danielle decide to give her father for his birthday?
Marie, I need your help. I want to give my father a really nice birthday present this year, but I just don't know what to get him. Have you got any ideas?
Well, Danielle, last year I didn't know what to get mine either, so I decided to bake him a lovely cake.
That's a good idea. My dad loves chocolate, so I can make a chocolate cake for him. Oh, thanks for that. Problem solved. Marie, I need your help. I want to give my father a really nice birthday present this year, but I just don't know what to get him. Have you got any ideas?
Well, Danielle, last year I didn't know what to get mine either. So I decided to bake him a lovely cake.
That's a good idea. My dad loves chocolate, so I can make a chocolate cake for him. Oh, thanks for that. Problem solved.
Question 4. At what time does the supermarket close on Mondays?
Good morning. This is Freetown Supermarket. How can I help?
I'm just calling to ask what your opening hours are.
We are open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day except Wednesday. On Wednesdays we stay open late, until 10 p.m.
OK, thanks.
Good morning. This is Freetown Supermarket. How can I help?
I'm just calling to ask what your opening hours are.
We are open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day except Wednesday. On Wednesdays we stay open late, until 10 p.m.
OK, thanks.
Question 5. What two things is Roxy Moon going to do on the radio show?
Well, here's a treat for all you rock music fans out there. Today on the show, we have the amazing Roxy Moon. She's here in the studio, and later on, she is going to do an interview, then sing for us live on air. Meanwhile, here is a 1980s dance track from... Well, here's a treat for all you rock music fans out there. Today on the show, we have the amazing Roxy Moon. She's here in the studio, and later on, she is going to do an interview, then sing for us live on air. Meanwhile, here is a 1980s dance track from...
Question 6. What does Anika want to eat for her lunch? And why has she chosen this?
If you sit there, Anika, I'll go and buy our lunch. What would you like?
A chicken salad, please, Jan. Oh, and a bottle of fizzy water to drink.
That doesn't sound very much. Would you like any bread and butter or chips with that?
No, thanks. I'm trying to eat a healthy diet.
If you sit there, Anika, I'll go and buy our lunch. What would you like?
A chicken salad, please, Jan. Oh, and a bottle of fizzy water to drink.
That doesn't sound very much. Would you like any bread and butter or chips with that?
No, thanks. I'm trying to eat a healthy diet.
That is the last of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following talk by a man who works as an ice cream taster, and then complete the details below. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for inviting me to take part in your careers session today. My job is quite unusual. There are very few jobs in the world like it, but perhaps my talk may open your minds to the possibility of taking up a career in the food industry. You see, I'm an ice cream taster. Yes, I get paid to eat ice cream every day. In fact, over the years, I've tasted more than 810 million litres of ice cream. It's enough to give anyone indigestion. As an ice cream taster, I have to taste, then either approve or reject every flavour of ice cream the company makes every day.
to make sure I only taste the ice cream and not the aftertaste of the plastic or metal of a spoon, I have to use a special spoon made of real gold. I try 3 cartons of ice cream from each batch, sampling from the beginning, the middle, and the end of the production process. The ice cream has to be of a consistent standard for our customers, so I have to check the flavour. I also check that the added ingredients are properly mixed in. For example, in toffee swirl ice cream, I check that the toffee sauce is evenly mixed and swirled throughout the carton.
It sounds like a fun job, but it's not all fun and games. We're in the business of making premium ice cream. That is, the very, very best. So the quality of the ice cream has to be exceptional. My job is a highly responsible one. The company and all the workers in the factory depend on me to keep standards high.
I also have to take care of my own sense of taste. The company takes this seriously and has insured my taste buds for $1 million. I mustn't eat spicy food, and I'm not allowed to use perfumed soap or aftershave lotion, anything which might affect my tasting abilities. My family has worked in the ice cream industry for generations. When I was growing up, I worked in my uncle's ice cream factory, and it was there that I began perfecting my taste buds for ice cream. But nowadays, there are many universities that offer a food science course that would provide a path towards becoming an ice cream taster, if you're inspired by my story. Any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thank you for inviting me to take part in your careers session today. My job is quite unusual. There are very few jobs in the world like it, but perhaps my talk may open your minds to the possibility of taking up a career in the food industry. You see, I'm an ice cream taster. Yes, I get paid to eat ice cream every day. In fact, over the years, I've tasted more than 810 million litres of ice cream. It's enough to give anyone indigestion. As an ice cream taster, I have to taste, then either approve or reject every flavour of ice cream the company makes every day. To make sure I only taste the ice cream and not the aftertaste of the plastic or metal of a spoon, I have to use a special spoon made of real gold. I try 3 cartons of ice cream from each batch, sampling from the beginning, the middle, and the end of the production process. The ice cream has to be of a consistent standard for our customers, so I have to check the flavour. I also check that the added ingredients are properly mixed in. For example, in toffee swirl ice cream, I check that the toffee sauce is evenly mixed and swirled throughout the carton.
It sounds like a fun job, but it's not all fun and games. We're in the business of making premium ice cream. That is, the very, very best. So the quality of the ice cream has to be exceptional. My job is a highly responsible one. The company and all the workers in the factory depend on me to keep standards high.
I also have to take care of my own sense of taste. The company takes this seriously and has insured my taste buds for $1 million. I mustn't eat spicy food,
and I am not allowed to use perfumed soap or aftershave lotion, anything which might affect my tasting abilities. My family has worked in the ice cream industry for generations. When I was growing up, I worked in my uncle's ice cream factory, and it was there that I began perfecting my taste buds for ice cream. But nowadays, there are many universities that offer a food science course that would provide a path towards becoming an ice cream taster, if you're inspired by my story. Any questions?
That is the end of question 7. In a moment you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview with a man who makes sculptures out of butter, and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good afternoon, Mr. Randeev. I'm a reporter from the Evening News. I wonder, do you have time to tell me about your work?
Yes, I'd be very happy to. I love making models of people and things.
Well, I've seen sculptures made out of wood or stone before, but never out of butter.
Yes, I used to work mostly with wood, but I wanted to try something new.
I must say how impressed I am to see what you've made. This is a fascinating exhibition.
Well, thank you.
Many people use butter every day to spread on their bread or to put on vegetables or to cook with. We're used to eating it, but who would have thought it possible to use it to make works of art?
I know. A lot of people are surprised when they see what I've made.
I just love this model of a car. It's old-fashioned, about 500 centimetres long, and open-topped, with four people sitting in it. The detail that you've been able to carve into the butter is amazing. The lady's hat has got tiny flowers on it. The man is wearing glasses. Oh, the car's wheels are perfect. You've even included the spokes on the wheels. However did you do it?
Well, making butter sculptures requires a lot of patience and concentration. They take a very long time to make. The car took nearly 90 hours, because the inside and the underside are all detailed. If you breathe while you're carving, it moves your hand. You can't do that, as butter is difficult to work with. So I take a deep breath and hold it, do what I have to do, then lean back and breathe out. It's a slow process.
I can imagine. The sculpture looks as though it could melt at any moment.
That's because it could, if it got too warm. The secret is to use the right type of butter. I prefer the kind of butter used to make pastry. It melts at a higher temperature, so it's easier to work with. I also have to wash my hands in ice-cold water every now and then, so that my fingers don't get too warm and spoil the sculpture.
I hear that you've won prizes for your work.
That's right, I have. In London last month, I won 2 gold medals and a silver medal at an international competition.
What happens to the sculptures after you've made them?
They can stand on display for years if they are kept cool enough. I created a sailing ship for a hotel in Kenya several years ago, and I think it's still there.
Well, thank you for your time. It's been really interesting. My article will be in tomorrow's paper.
Great! So soon. I'll look out for it.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good afternoon, Mr. Randeev. I'm a reporter from the Evening News. I wonder, do you have time to tell me about your work?
Yes, I'd be very happy to. I love making models of people and things.
Well, I've seen sculptures made out of wood or stone before, but never out of butter.
Yes, I used to work mostly with wood, but I wanted to try something new.
I must say how impressed I am to see what you've made. This is a fascinating exhibition.
Well, thank you.
Many people use butter every day to spread on their bread or to put on vegetables or to cook with. We're used to eating it, but who would have thought it possible to use it to make works of art?
I know. A lot of people are surprised when they see what I've made.
I just love this model of a car. It's old-fashioned, about 500 centimetres long, and open-topped, with four people sitting in it. The detail that you've been able to carve into the butter is amazing. The lady's hat has got tiny flowers on it. The man is wearing glasses. Oh, the car's wheels are perfect. You've even included the spokes on the wheels. However did you do it?
Well, making butter sculptures requires a lot of patience and concentration. They take a very long time to make. The car took nearly 90 hours because the inside and the underside are all detailed. If you breathe while you're carving, it moves your hand. You can't do that, as butter is difficult to work with. So, I take a deep breath and hold it. Do what I have to do, then lean back and breathe out. It's a slow process.
I can imagine. The sculpture looks as though it could melt at any moment.
That's because it could, if it got too warm. The secret is to use the right type of butter. I prefer the kind of butter used to make pastry. It melts at a higher temperature, so it's easier to work with. I also have to wash my hands in ice-cold water every now and then, so that my fingers don't get too warm and spoil the sculpture.
I hear that you've won prizes for your work.
That's right, I have. In London last month, I won 2 gold medals and a silver medal at an international competition.
What happens to the sculptures after you've made them?
They can stand on display for years if they are kept cool enough. I created a sailing ship for a hotel in Kenya several years ago, and I think it's still there.
Well, thank you for your time. It's been really interesting. My article will be in tomorrow's paper.
Great! So soon. I'll look out for it.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following radio interview about a special hospital which treats large birds called falcons, and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the radio interview twice.
I'm standing in a new hospital in the United Arab Emirates, and I've just been joined by the hospital director. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our new hospital for falcons. This room is where we do minor operations. And here comes one of our feathered patients. I thought you'd like to see the hospital at work.
As I speak, a falcon is being brought in, sitting on the gloved hand of a nurse and not looking at all frightened. This is definitely no ordinary patient, and this is no ordinary hospital.
Yes, I'm proud to say this is the world's largest medical centre dedicated to the care and treatment of falcons.
So tell me, what's wrong with this falcon? She looks healthy. Oh, such a beautiful, proud bird, with her sharp beak and claws and bright, piercing eyes.
Well, fortunately, she's not ill or injured. She has actually come to have her nails cut and polished. This is not for beauty, but for health reasons. When these birds of prey are in the wild, they keep their nails short by sitting on rocks or by tearing meat. But in captivity, falcons need to have their nails trimmed every year, or else the nails will become twisted and cause injury.
Does that really require hospital treatment?
Yes, they are very sensitive birds, so we have to use anaesthetic to prevent stress. They could die of a heart attack if we didn't do this.
Before you do this operation, perhaps you could tell our listeners a little about why so many people here in the Middle East have falcons.
There's been a tradition of keeping falcons in the Middle East for hundreds of years. In the past, they were used for hunting. The Bedouin, the nomadic people who live in the deserts of Arabia, used to trap them as young birds, then take them into their tents. The birds were timid and scared, so the Bedouin would carry the birds around with them every minute of the day and night to get them used to human company. Falcons became part of the Bedouin's family, and the birds still have exactly the same position in the family nowadays. It's one of the few things that connect people to their past, a very important part of the national identity. This is why falcons are so important in this country and why some people are so proud of them.
Yes, I've even heard of people taking their falcons abroad for exhibitions and displays.
That's right. In fact, the government has introduced a passport for falcons so they can travel on planes with their owners. I think they are the only animals in the world which are allowed to travel in the cabin of the plane along with the passengers. But not all airlines permit it, of course.
Do many falcons come to this hospital?
We see between 60 and 80 falcons a day. And we have room for 200 falcons to stay at any one time. They certainly keep our 52 members of staff very busy. Excuse me, but I see our patient is ready for treatment.
Of course. Thank you for your time.
Now you will hear the interview again.
I'm standing in a new hospital in the United Arab Emirates, and I've just been joined by the hospital director. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our new hospital for falcons. This room is where we do minor operations. And here comes one of our feathered patients. I thought you'd like to see the hospital at work.
As I speak, a falcon is being brought in, sitting on the gloved hand of a nurse and not looking at all frightened. This is definitely no ordinary patient. And this is no ordinary hospital.
Yes, I'm proud to say this is the world's largest medical centre dedicated to the care and treatment of falcons.
So tell me, what's wrong with this falcon? She looks healthy. Oh, such a beautiful, proud bird, with her sharp beak and claws and bright, piercing eyes.
Well, fortunately, she's not ill or injured. She has actually come to have her nails cut and polished. This is not for beauty, but for health reasons. When these birds of prey are in the wild, they keep their nails short by sitting on rocks or by tearing meat. But in captivity, falcons need to have their nails trimmed every year, or else the nails will become twisted and cause injury.
Does that really require hospital treatment?
Yes. They are very sensitive birds, so we have to use anaesthetic to prevent stress. They could die of a heart attack if we didn't do this.
Before you do this operation, perhaps you could tell our listeners a little about why so many people here in the Middle East have falcons.
There's been a tradition of keeping falcons in the Middle East for hundreds of years. In the past, they were used for hunting. The Bedouin, the nomadic people who live in the deserts of Arabia, used to trap them as young birds, then take them into their tents. The birds were timid and scared, so the Bedouin would carry the birds around with them every minute of the day and night to get them used to human company. Falcons became part of the Bedouin's family, and the birds still have exactly the same position in the family nowadays. It's one of the few things that connect people to their past, a very important part of the national identity. This is why falcons are so important in this country, and why some people are so proud of them.
Yes, I've even heard of people taking their falcons abroad for exhibitions and displays.
That's right. In fact, the government has introduced a passport for falcons so they can travel on planes with their owners. I think they are the only animals in the world which are allowed to travel in the cabin of the plane along with the passengers. But not all airlines permit it, of course.
Do many falcons come to this hospital?
We see between 60 and 80 falcons a day. And we have room for 200 falcons to stay at any one time. They certainly keep our 52 members of staff very busy. Excuse me, but I see our patient is ready for treatment.
Of course. Thank you for your time.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following radio interview about an invasion of giant jellyfish in Japan, and then indicate which statement, A, B, or C, best completes the sentence by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Our World Today. Our first item is about a problem facing fishermen in Japan. A swarm of giant jellyfish. Our correspondent Joe Bridger has the details. Joe, what sort of jellyfish are we talking about exactly?
These are no ordinary jellyfish.
such as many of our listeners will be familiar with, these are super-sized sea creatures, things you might see in your worst nightmares. Pink in colour, each one can measure up to 1.8 metres in length and weigh up to 204 kilograms. They are dangerous animals and would not be out of place in a horror film. They grow at a fantastic rate too. They change from the size of a grain of rice to the size of a washing machine in less than 6 months.
Ugh, they sound like real monsters. But what sort of problems are they causing the Japanese fishermen?
They cause havoc in many ways, quite apart from the fact that they can sting people with their long, dangling tentacles. A major problem is that they poison the fish in the fishermen's nets with their slime and make the fish impossible to eat. Their sheer numbers are an issue too. In 2009, a 10-ton fishing boat was sunk as the crew tried to haul in a net containing dozens of these creatures.
Have the Japanese always had this problem?
No. In the past, these sea giants were to be found off the coast of China. Just occasionally, they would travel into the Sea of Japan in search of food. But since around 2005, they have been moving into Japanese waters in larger numbers. And this year, the problem is much, much worse. There are over 100 times the usual number of jellyfish in these waters, and the total number of jellyfish is now several million.
So how big is this problem?
The result has been an absolute disaster. The fishermen have reported an 80% drop in their income. Their nets are getting weighed down and broken by the mass of jellyfish which have invaded the area. The jellyfish crush and poison valuable fish in the nets, such as the tuna and salmon that the fishermen rely on to make a living.
Have we got any idea what has caused this invasion of jellyfish?
No one knows for sure. It's possible that the oceans, heated by global warming, are creating the perfect jellyfish breeding ground around Japan. Another theory is that overfishing has decreased the numbers of some kinds of fish which would normally feed on the jellyfish and keep their numbers down.
It sounds as if these jellyfish are a bit of a mystery.
Too true. Very little is known about them. We don't even know how long they live for. To try to change this, some scientists have set up a jellyfish tracking project, and divers have fixed electronic trackers to the jellyfish.
However do you fasten anything to the body of a jellyfish?
Well, it's a difficult and dangerous job, as you can imagine. These trackers will record how far the animals travel, to what depth, and the temperature of the water they live in. The study will take 4 years and aims to solve some of the mysteries surrounding jellyfish.
Is there anything the fishermen can do in the meantime? Can they set traps for them or something?
The fishermen have been designing nets with sharp wires on them to keep the jellyfish out of the nets. And one enterprising company in Japan has even come up with a slightly chewy vanilla and jellyfish ice cream, created by soaking diced cubes of the jellyfish in milk.
That's certainly an ingenious idea to turn a problem into a business opportunity. Not that I'll be buying any jellyfish ice cream just yet. Well, thanks, Joe.
Now you will hear the radio interview again.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Our World Today. Our first item
is about a problem facing fishermen in Japan. A swarm of giant jellyfish. Our correspondent Joe Bridger has the details. Joe, what sort of jellyfish are we talking about exactly?
These are no ordinary jellyfish, such as many of our listeners will be familiar with. These are super-sized sea creatures, things you might see in your worst nightmares. Pink in colour, each one can measure up to 1.8 metres in length and weigh up to 204 kilograms. They are dangerous animals and would not be out of place in a horror film. They grow at a fantastic rate too. They change from the size of a grain of rice to the size of a washing machine in less than 6 months.
Oh, they sound like real monsters. But what sort of problems are they causing the Japanese fishermen?
They cause havoc in many ways, quite apart from the fact that they can sting people with their long, dangling tentacles. A major problem is that they poison the fish in the fishermen's nets with their slime and make the fish impossible to eat. Their sheer numbers are an issue too. In 2009, a 10-ton fishing boat was sunk as the crew tried to haul in a net containing dozens of these creatures.
Have the Japanese always had this problem?
No. In the past, these sea giants were to be found off the coast of China. Just occasionally, they would travel into the Sea of Japan in search of food. But since around 2005, they have been moving into Japanese waters in larger numbers. And this year, the problem is much, much worse. There are over 100 times the usual number of jellyfish in these waters, and the total number of jellyfish is now several million.
So how big is this problem?
The result has been an absolute disaster. The fishermen have reported an 80% drop in their income. Their nets are getting weighed down and broken by the mass of jellyfish which have invaded the area. The jellyfish crush and poison valuable fish in the nets, such as the tuna and salmon that the fishermen rely on to make a living.
Have we got any idea what has caused this invasion of jellyfish?
No one knows for sure. It's possible that the oceans, heated by global warming, are creating the perfect jellyfish breeding ground around Japan. Another theory is that overfishing has decreased the numbers of some kinds of fish which would normally feed on the jellyfish and keep their numbers down.
It sounds as if these jellyfish are a bit of a mystery.
Too true. Very little is known about them. We don't even know how long they live for. To try to change this, some scientists have set up a jellyfish tracking project, and divers have fixed electronic trackers to the jellyfish.
However do you fasten anything to the body of a jellyfish?
Well, it's a difficult and dangerous job, as you can imagine. These trackers will record how far the animals travel, to what depth, and the temperature of the water they live in. The study will take 4 years and aims to solve some of the mysteries surrounding jellyfish.
Is there anything the fishermen can do in the meantime? Can they set traps for them or something?
The fishermen have been designing nets with sharp wires on them to keep the jellyfish out of the nets. And one enterprising company in Japan has even come up with a slightly chewy vanilla and jellyfish ice cream, created by soaking diced cubes of the jellyfish in milk.
That's certainly an ingenious idea to turn a problem into a business opportunity. Not that I'll be buying any jellyfish ice cream just yet. Well, thanks, Joe.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.